Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Okay, guys, welcome to Early Call Time with Andrew J.J. Nadav and also our guest, Annie Brown.
Hi.
Welcome.
Annie Brown is a storyboard artist for Family Guy, and I know what you're thinking. Yes, this is Eric Brown's wife.
Yep.
You guys met on the Family Guy show.
We did.
And that's probably, who did we get first?
This is your life.
Did we get Eric to say first, or did we get Annie to say yes first?
What?
Probably we got Eric to say yes first, because we had him on first.
Yes,
we,
on the show.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, we got you through Eric.
Uh-huh. And then Eric was like, Annie will do this. And I'm like, fool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to talk about Family Guy.
So, tell us, first, before we even talk about your time on Family Guy, I mean, being a storyboard artist, what's that like?
Well, it's a lot of work, mm-hmm. and there's a lot involved, and it's a different process at every show.
Okay.
If you talk to other storyboard artists on other shows, they might tell you something completely different than what I do on a daily basis.
Okay.
Before I was on Family Guy, I worked on King of the Hill.
Oh, nice.
For a couple
That's
seasons.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And that was actually like my first industry job. So, and I've done a little work on American Dad, but that's about it.
Okay.
Sometimes, we're in the same building, so sometimes they can kind of pull each other to help out. But not anymore, actually. American Dad's going to be moving to TBS, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, the Superstation.
Exactly. Right. I think that's right. If it's wrong, I'm sorry, American Dad, but I think it's TBS. So when I was on King of the Hill, I did what was called character layout, which basically is the closest thing to animation that anyone does in America for TV out here anymore.
Oh, interesting.
It's basically we were working on pencil and paper, and we had the actual paper and the pegboards, and you'd have to like put it down and flip it and do all the poses, not all of them, but lots of the poses. And basically they would have storyboard artists and character layout artists there. So when I moved on from King of the Hill to Family Guy, now they just have storyboard artists. So basically the storyboard artists are doing what character layout artists did back when I worked on King of the Hill. So we're basically doing all of the movement that you see, except like I would call it the grunt work. So
it's kind of like the blocking, like you're doing the blocking.
Yes, okay. Yes. Like we start from a script, and there's nothing else really. We just have the script, and we have the track, which is all the voices. And
so so you're not getting any like notes. Like okay, so now from this, like while he's saying this line, Peter goes from left side of the screen to the right side of the screen.
Our job is basically to figure that out.
Okay.
So we do all, we stage it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's kind of like directing almost.
It is. We have a lot of involvement with directors though. And a lot of the time directors have a specific vision and they tell us what they would like it to look like. But most of the time we start out and we do thumbnails, which is rough sketches of basically what every single shot is going to look like, indicating, you know, where characters are going to enter, where they're going to exit. And any sort of complex action, we basically have to work it all out. Because when we're done with our phase, everything gets shipped overseas to Korea to get animated, fully animated.
Mm-hmm. And they can't do, like, 5 frames from, like, a fight.
No.
I was going to
say,
when you get a script and it says the chicken fight, are you just like, damn it?
Yes. It literally is so funny because those chicken fights, you guys know, they take up 6 to 7 minutes of animation, which in the animation world is an eternity. And it's so funny because we will literally get a script and it will say, Peter and the chicken fight.
that's how long those fights are?
Yeah.
6 to 7 minutes?
Yep, they can be
it's
really
like a whole
long.
Act, right?
Yeah.
A
lot
yeah.
of the time, and that's really, actually, it's one of the things that I think, I've only worked a little bit on chicken fights. We have like certain guys that...
Yeah, the whole chicken fight department.
Yeah. Well, people, guys that are used to doing it or artists that enjoy doing it or are really good at it and work on a lot of the chicken fights. But a lot of the time it'll be scripted like... a little bit more than Peter and the Chicken Fight. It'll say, you know, they're going to go through a barge, and then, like, they're going to go through this, and they're going to go through that. So, I remember we actually had originally we were supposed to have a chicken fight in the Return of the Jedi episode where Peter and Boba Fett, the Han Solo and Boba Fett fight. But for whatever reason, they decided to not do it. It was pretty funny what ended up happening to Boba Fett in that episode, but... but yes, those ones actually take a lot more animation on our end because we need to indicate to Korea exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot more work than just storyboarding. I mean, I sometimes call it storyboarding slash animating, because a lot of the time that's what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah. Do you go through a lot of versions of, like, say, for the chicken fight, let's say, well, I know with us, we do a lot of visual effects, and sometimes we might have nine
versions.
When
you say we, what do you mean by we?
The show that I work on.
Witches?
Scorpion.
Oh, okay.
We do visual effects for, you know, just simple, sometimes it's beauty fixes where, oh, they have acne or take it off, whatever. But, you know, I wish it was that simple. And
do you ever have to take off Chris Griffin's acne?
No, we leave that on. I mean, what's the point, right?
Yeah, exactly. Chris. But for when you send it off to Korea and they bring it back, do you say, oh, can you change this, this, and this?
Oh, yes. We have an entire department for that.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It's called retakes. And they basically, when they send something back, if something's not quite looking right, they will... address that and send it back, and then they'll have to fix it overseas and send it back. Sometimes gotcha. Things go through several rounds until it gets right.
That's frustrating, I'm sure.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, I don't work in retakes.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm a little thankful for that. It's pretty tedious, but yeah, it can. I'm sure it can be frustrating for them. I know Eric. It's, mm-hmm. Eric deals with the retakes a lot more than I do. Unless they need like a, if it's something like they have a very current joke. And they want to get a scene in very quickly, mm-hmm. so the joke is still funny, mm-hmm. or timely, or topical. Then we will help with that. They'll throw us a script page and say, "Here, we need a scene," and then we have to board out the scene, and they send it overseas, and then get it back very quickly. So that's probably the only time that I'm ever involved with retakes, is if something needs to be done really quickly.
What's the quickest turnaround you've ever seen for a retake?
You know, I actually am not completely sure about the timelines on that, because I'm not in the I'm not in that department. But I remember, and I think Eric brought it up on the podcast you talked to him about, the quickest joke I remember seeing turn around was that Christian Bale bit with tape recorder. Because it's nice. Super easy to do. I mean, all they needed to do is do some animation of a tape recorder moving and then loop it. And that was very, very simple. So, but I think they can probably, if they need to, get something back in like a week or two. I think that's how quick they can.
That's, oh, man.
It's super
so
expensive, I'm sure. That's why, obviously, the entire show isn't done that way. But when we need to do it, we do it.
So, you're a storyboard artist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she said.
Right. Yeah. I remember covering that.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide that that's what you wanted to do? Like, first of all, when did you realize you were artistic? And then second of all, when did you even further hone that down to be like, I want to work on animated shows?
You know, I can't remember specifically when I decided I wanted to work in animation, but I have to say it was probably since I was a kid, because I've always grown up just obsessed with Disney animated movies and anything animation, cartoons. I always came home after school, up through high school. I would come home from school and watch cartoons, like Animaniacs and all that stuff. And
could you sing the All the Country song?
I can.
Do you want to?
maybe
Panama,
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and French Guiana, Barbados, and Guam. I won't do the rest.
Okay. Wow. I believe
you. Believe me.
I believe it. You got it. That was well done.
Yeah, I remember locking myself up in my room for a couple hours to learn that one. But anyway.
Feel of morality. Turn.
I love it. I actually have an animation cell of Yakko with the Wheel of Morality.
That's amazing.
It's one of my favorite things I own. But anyway, so I think when I actually discovered I could draw, it literally was a discovery. Was like, I think it was in like third grade. And it was like art time in school. And I remember this. I had a Little Mermaid t-shirt or sweatshirt. It was like an Ariel. And I remember just going, okay, I guess I'll try to draw Ariel. And I took off the sweatshirt and I just started to copy it. And it looked like Ariel. And I remember my teacher going, oh my gosh, like, you draw. And I was like, I guess I do.
You can't trace a sweater either. Yeah. That's not...
Yeah. It was literally something I just discovered. I didn't... and then a lot of it has been self-taught. Obviously, I went to art school and I've learned a lot from art school. But over the years, I've just kind of... honed it myself. So and I would say probably around junior high is when I started getting interested in animation.
So how did you create your career path to go from, okay, I know that I like to draw, how did you decide like what your next move was, and then like what were your next moves to get on? You said King of the Hill was your first show,
right?
So how did you, like, what was your journey to
my trajectory?
Yeah.
Well, I took art, a lot of art classes in high school, as many as they offered, I took them. Mm-hmm. And then I decided I wanted to
Were they good ones? Did you feel like you learned in them?
They were pretty good. I feel like I learned a lot looking back in hindsight. Like, I can see now what my teachers were trying to do and what they were trying to get me to do and what I kind of refused to do because I was still doing my own thing. So yeah, it was definitely my eye opening, and they were really good. It was really good teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to go to, I went to CalArts for like a summer program, and it was a specific animation program that you got college credit for and everything. And that was kind of, I kind of just did it for fun, and that was where I kind of fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to go to Cal State Fullerton, which had a entertainment arts animation major. And this was back in like 99. They really didn't have animation majors anywhere. Like, this was one of the first fledgling ones, other than CalArts, obviously. This was the only kind of, the first kind of state school that was like, hey, let's try pushing this. Now, everywhere you go, you can find an animation major, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Cal State Fullerton. Mainly another reason is I wanted to work at Disneyland, which was one of my favorite things about going there. And then I did caricatures at Disneyland kind of near the end of my college time. And then from there...
Oh, man.
That's cool.
It's not cool. It's the most awful job you can ever, ever imagine. Oh, my God. I'm getting the cold sweats right now thinking about it.
Did you see do you watch Nathan For You at all?
No.
He did a bit where he went to a caricature artist and made him, like, very offensive. So if it was an Asian person, he, like, automatically put, like, a rice hat on. Made, like, a dick joke.
Oh, God.
And it was great. Maybe if you went through that trajectory.
I once drew a little boy as a little girl. Because I thought he was a little girl.
Oh, no.
And he had a... His name was Mackenzie. I'm sorry, that's a girl's name, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. That's an ambiguous.
I thought it was
a
girl.
It's androgynous.
And I am the last one to say anything negative about androgynous names. My daughter's name is Parker. I know all about unisex names. They're awesome. But, like, I wasn't even thinking anything of it. I saw this blonde, curly-haired, long, curly-haired kid in a very androgynous outfit named Mackenzie. This kid wanted to be playing volleyball on the beach. And you can't, we can't go around that. So you are
like,
suddenly...
Do you put them in a two-piece? Do you put them in a one? Like,
yeah. And the thing is that I wasn't even sitting there struggling about it. I was just like, oh, it's a girl. Like, I didn't... And then it was, I don't even want to think about it. Literally the number one most embarrassing moment of my entire life. Definitely.
Oh, no.
It was awful. But
I had a cousin who kept on getting mistaken for a girl.
Yeah.
And then he got a haircut and then no longer.
Exactly. I mean, I felt kind of bad for this kid. I could tell, you know, his feelings were a little hurt, but hopefully his parents cut his hair because he was...
Because of that.
Yeah.
It's like, once that happens, like, I'd imagine after the first time that happens, like, we need to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
Before he has an identity.
Exactly,
crisis.
Exactly.
Right.
And I feel bad about it to this very day, but like...
Okay, so cold sweats doing caricatures.
Yeah. And then, it was totally happenstance. I had a friend who knew a guy who said, hey, my friend works at King of the Hill, a good friend of mine named Ron Rubio, and he helped me get the job. I mean, he kind of said, this is what we need to do, and you have to do a test. Basically, to get a job on television, you do this test. They give you a script page, and they kind of say, here, draw these characters. They want to make sure you can draw the characters. And so I did my test, and I got the job, and it was great. I mean, it was awesome. And so then it was just kind of that little leg in kind of helps.
And how long of a test is it? It's just one page? Like, how, like, what duration of animation is it?
It's pretty intensive, and you don't get paid for it, obviously.
Okay.
How
much time of work do you put into that test?
I'm trying to remember. I honestly, I don't even remember the test. I mean, I remember my Family Guy test, but I don't remember the King of the Hill test. So I would say, though, it was a good couple full 8-hour days worth of work to get that finished. And you have to pretty much do that for all television programs. I understand it. They need to see that you can draw their characters because it's the fact that you can draw, they can see that you can draw. But sometimes, sometimes it's just, you know, they need to know for sure that you're a right fit. So
it's like, oh, let's get Annie to do this episode. It's like, oh no, she can't do Hank right.
Exactly.
Let's give her scenes without Hank.
Exactly.
It's like, you can't.
Really, yeah,
which doesn't happen.
I was gonna ask about how. Can you look at a Family Guy show or a King of the Hill and see who drew what.
Like, with tiny little discrepancies, like, oh no. Like, he hooks Bobby's ear this way.
Absolutely not, because we have this thing in animation called on model, and when they send it across overseas, they put everything on model, which means it's going to look exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So,
because it's all digital now, so it's exactly different. Okay.
But, I mean, I think even before we were digital, that's just the way they do it in all animation, because they need to make sure it looks consistent.
Right.
If you watch like a Disney movie or some like a feature movie, mm-hmm. it's a little bit less obvious, because sometimes you can mm-hmm. see a little slightly different. You can be like, oh, that animator might have done that, or that animator. You can see they're allowed a little bit more freedom to do stuff like that. But we basically have to, everything needs to look very uniform with reason. I mean, the characters need to be recognizable.
Sure.
But there's this version or this phase of the process called the animatic, where everything's mm-hmm. rough, and it's basically all of the storyboard artist's drawings put into a rough cut. And that's when you can watch it and kind of see everybody's personal style, because that's when it kind of looks like the artist. So that's kind of cool. That's neat to see.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's interesting. I wasn't planning on going on. I was about to go on a tangent. Go ahead.
I was going
to.
Well, you guys recently did the Simpsons crossover. Mm-hmm. Did you guys draw the Simpsons characters within your show, or did you have their guys do?
That's such a good question.
Thanks, man.
It is a good question.
Can we just all take a second?
Yes, let's
and congratulate JJ on mm-hmm. what a great question that was. Done.
Thanks.
I'm giving it its proper.
Yeah, is it like, do you guys like go into someone else's, like, is it like the Family Guy's in charge of this world, and then you'll bring the Simpsons people in to like do?
Actually, not on this episode. I mean, other than
great
a little
episode,
bit.
By the way,
thank you.
I loved that.
I can't
episode.
Take credit because I was on maternity leave. I didn't get to touch it. But it's an amazing episode. Yeah.
The episode was
well, Eric did a great job.
Eric did. Eric definitely touched it a lot. But it's, what was it? Wait, what was it? Oh, we, that was a 100% a Family Guy episode. We didn't have mm-hmm. Simpsons animators working on it. It was all our guys. We had, there are some artists that we have who used to work on Simpsons. So that was helpful.
Oh,
they
awesome.
They definitely used their help because they know how the characters move and how they look. And we had some, as far as I know, we did have some Simpsons people coming at the beginning and giving notes.
Right.
And as I recall, the notes were pretty minimal, which shocked us. But everything kind of came across, I mean, yeah, that was all Family Guy animation, which I look back and I go, wow, that's pretty amazing. Because if I were to look at that, you know, from a layperson's point of view, I would assume that it was a collaborative effort, too.
Yeah, because the town looks exactly the way the Simpsons town mm-hmm. looks like. Mm-hmm. The characters, I mean, it was pretty awesome.
Thanks. Yeah.
That was the first time I actually, in a long time, watched it live, because I wanted to see it live and kind of, because I watched Simpsons when I was little too, and I don't know, it's just kind of it was awesome.
It was exciting. It was a big event. Yeah.
Is there a way to, like, I know if you can go into one thing, like you're doing characters for Mike Judge show, the look of that show is going to be very different than, you know, something that Seth is doing. Is mm-hmm. there? Is that just kind of a practice thing from an artistic point of view, or you just kind of practice that kind of character and
that
sort
style.
Of world? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, and also it's a lot of, obviously it's a lot of repetition, so you just kind of get used to it. And definitely, I mean, I've been on the show for almost 8 years. It's, you kind of get really, really used to the style and know what they're going to, even sometimes they're acting, you can pretty much determine what I've listened to Seth so many times that I know what he's gonna read most things. Every once in a while, I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, you read it that way. It's a little strange, but I'm so used to hearing it that I can just kind of, I know how he's gonna read that line, which is, I don't know if that's kind of a crazy thing, but
no, that means that anticipatory on your job.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
I've got it in my ear so much. Yeah. So.
You put that on.
Well,
your
it's like
way.
It's like reading a script and, you know, just. In live action, like, you know how they're going to deliver it. Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. There was some, you mentioned Disneyland when we were walking in.
Yeah.
Now you just recently got something made. Disney made something that you created.
Yes, yes. This is actually really exciting. I've wanted to work for Disney, honestly, my whole life, so this was really cool.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if you guys have heard of this. It's a collectible. It's called Vinylmation.
It's, I have not.
Basically, I brought one I can show you a little later, but
sweet.
You can, it's a little Mickey Mouse vinyl figure.
Okay.
And it's basically, imagine it as a blank figure, and then they put different designs on it. It may not have anything to do with Mickey Mouse, but it's basically like a way of expressing art. It's on like a Mickey-shaped canvas. And these are collectibles you can buy at like Disneyland and at the parks. And they have like other characters on it, so you might have like a Winnie the Pooh.
You have this in your bag?
I do.
Just take it out right now.
You're talking about it, so I need a...
I brought one.
He needs visual stimulation.
You brought a blank one? Or?
No, I brought one that I made to give to you guys.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is freaking cool.
You get
presents. Ooh, it looks like chocolate.
So this, you can't eat it. This is a character that just came out. I don't know if you guys remember. It's an old Disneyland attraction called America Sings.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Back when I was a kid, it was one of my favorite things. Which is, this is one of the coolest things about Vinylmation, is they go really deep. They, what I would call Disneyland deep cuts. Like, really obscure, old retro attractions, like, can have a platform. You know, it's pretty cool. So I designed this character and pitched it and was able to get that turned into a figure, and I have.
Oh my god, that's so
basically
cool.
What it is it's the same Mickey shape, mm-hmm. but it's got a bunch of different. You can buy ones with different
designs
on it.
Exactly,
that's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it's really cool, and it's caught on, especially with Disney collectors. It's kind of just a neat collectible.
Whoa, so, what was the process of, like, how did that all even occur?
Did
you just walk in with a gun and you're like, make it.
No, you know, it's a very vocal community, which is really cool, especially with social media and online and everything.
How long have these been around for?
These have been around for, I want to say, maybe 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
So not the even head turn, long. I don't want to break it. Is it?
No, you can turn it. It's posable.
Oh, look at that.
I interacted with some of the artists that work at the Disney Design Group, and they, you know, just became friendly with them, and it was just kind of pretty organic. It was just kind of like, hey, you want to try this? And I was like, absolutely, where do I sign up? And
that's awesome.
So for this process, you have to do everything on Illustrator, mm-hmm. which is, I'm sure you guys are familiar. Mm-hmm. I was not familiar. I had to learn this program, which was kind of, it's if you don't know this program, it's pretty tedious, but it was totally worth it. I put a lot of work into learning this program. It's basically a template, and you design the character from every angle. And it's all 2D art, so none of this is actually, like, I don't paint it or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
And then they send that, again, overseas to get mass-produced. So, and the cool thing about this stuff that is unlike any other, or not any other, but most other Disney merchandise, is that my name's actually on the bottom of everyone that you get.
That's awesome.
Walt Disney?
Does it check out?
Yeah. Last name company.
Yeah.
Anne Marie?
Yeah.
Nice. That's very cool.
And I was talking to Eric, and you made a big size one that got auctioned off of the Lost, right?
Yes, that was, because
really, I know you're
exciting.
A huge fan of Lost. Both
you
and
I'm
Eric.
A huge fan. They also make different ones that are about 9 inches tall, same shape of Mickey, mm-hmm. but
even more collectible.
Exactly. Yeah. And I did a one of a kind. This one was actually painted, hand painted, of Lost. I can show you guys a picture of it at some point. I might have it on my phone, but...
Oh, you're not going to just give it to us as a present?
No.
We were going to sell that and pay off our mortgage.
Yeah. That one was sold for this charity called Cancer Gets Lost. All the proceeds went to a cancer organization. I don't remember exactly the organization, forgive me. But so, that was a couple years ago. And I actually got a really cool connection from that. I don't know if Eric mentioned. I got to meet Damon Lindelof. He saw it and said, hey, can you make one of those for me? And I was like,
oh, nice.
Yes. So I made him a Hurley, a 9-inch Hurley.
Oh, that's amazing. That's awesome.
And it was so cool. He came to the Family Guy studio and hung out. We had beers. We talked about Lost. It was like my dream day. It was amazing.
So what did it mean when you saw that fog come up? Like, you saw little things in it, the smoke monster?
Oh, God. Yeah. He doesn't know. I love you, Damon, but yeah. It was pretty funny, though. We were able to ask him pretty much anything we wanted, and he was very candid about it. It was awesome, and it was just so cool that he loves the show so much. And you could tell he loves talking about it, and he's very attached to it. So it was really cool. That was a really cool day.
Well, Eric mentioned that you guys will, oh, sorry, we're, you know, being nerds about this. And he pulls off his wedding ring, uh-huh. and it says...
I have to give you the lead up to this. We were telling him how dorky we were, and we showed him Eric's wedding ring, which on the inside says "My Constant," mm-hmm. which of course is a huge Lost reference. And I was like, "Oh my god, you probably think we're total geeks." And he goes, "Annie, look at this!" And he takes off his own wedding ring, and on the inside it said, "May the Force be with us." I think it was something like that. It was some Star Wars reference, and I was like, "He's just as geeky as us." It was so cool. It was very, like, Inception-ish moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Gosh. Well, you're a storyboard artist now. Do you want to do more than that? Or do you want to continue doing that and maybe go into a different show, maybe create your own show?
Yeah, how does it feel to, like, work in the confines of someone else's, like art style?
Well, it can be, you know, it's definitely it's a job, you know, we have to stick to certain rules and we have to stay within certain parameters, but that's, I think any show is that way. I like it. I like the comfort of it. It's nice. Mm-hmm. Right. I like the fact that at least for now, hopefully our show's not going anywhere. So that's really nice. I don't know if I have the energy or stamina to create my own show, honestly. That would be great if I could maybe have help with other...
Well, granted, you have, like, a team of writers and a team of sure. animators.
Yeah.
You have your own career.
I have gone from 8 years ago when Seth actually was working with us in the building and mm-hmm. we'd see him every day to now, and just to see, just, I can tell just the stress of all that he has had to do and everything that has weighed on him.
But he's, like, working on a million shows.
Though, he right? is. And I guess that a lot of that, I guess, is self-inflicted, I should say. Yeah. but I mean, I can. There's a certain amount of stress that comes along with being a show creator that, I don't know, I kind of like where I'm at. It's chill, and I like it. I do like it. This extra curricular stuff I'm doing with Disney is kind of a nice way to get a little bit more creative energy out elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Are you, when you're drawing, because I know a lot of people, when they think of storyboards, they're thinking of just, it's a rough sketch. There's no specific character in mind. It's almost, you know, some people are using stick figures, and it's just to kind of block the scene out. Are you drawing full on, like, scenes and...
It is...
In the detail that
yes.
we're seeing it on TV?
Yes. We, okay. There's no sort of roughness. Because okay. we, basically, the reason for that is that, I mean, we go through several stages, you know, thumbnail, then a rough, we do all the acting rough, and then we have to clean everything up.
Right.
We do have a cleanup stage, because the reason for that is they need to know what every expression is going to look like clearly. Mm-hmm. Every time Peter or Scooby or whoever has an expression change or a gesture change, anything like that, we need to indicate it as a storyboard artist. That's why I often say we're doing a lot of animation too, because a lot of storyboards you see for live action or other shows would have... It'd be a little bit rougher. It'd be a little bit more indicative mm-hmm. and less spelling it out for you every single step of the way. Whereas we have to do all of those key poses to basically let overseas know what is exactly going on. And the cool thing is we get to decide that. I mean, that's the flip side of it. I'm listening to the track and I get to decide what Peter's doing and what he's going to... I mean, I'm basically acting his face. And
right.
His emotions.
You're like, hey, so, Peter, I'd like a... Why don't you try this take a little bit more?
Give me another take, yeah. So that's cool. That's what's cool about it is when we get to be a little bit more creative in that regard. So that's... I mean, that's nice.
Does it make your job easier if you get an episode like the one they did with in the bank vault, where it's basically just one setting, which is one of my favorite episodes,
by the way. It's one of my favorites, too. That actually was directed by a good friend of mine, Dom Bianchi.
Oh.
And that was a really amazing episode. I think easier is a strange... It's not the right word, because you have a lot more work to do in terms of acting and posing.
Okay.
Because that's yeah. all you're focusing on. I mean, whereas if you have a regular show where maybe they're doing a little bit more action, it's... You have a lot more poses to deal with because there's a lot of action, but maybe you're not focusing as much on the acting and the emotion. I mean, that, mm-hmm. as you recall in that episode, they go all over
yeah.
the range of emotions. And
right.
It was I remember that being a very challenging episode for that reason.
Okay.
And I love doing the acting. That's actually some of my favorite stuff. I would prefer acting any day over action.
Right.
Because I find it more fun to kind of do their facial expressions and that sort of stuff.
So
that's pretty awesome.
So here's a question. Here's the tangent that I wanted to go on like 15 minutes ago.
a tangent with a tangent.
Have you seen those movies like A Scanner Darkly or I forget what the other one's called. The Waking Life.
I have not.
So what it is pretty much a movie where they filmed it in live action, and then they gave each scene to a different artist, and then they drew over each frame, and so each scene looks completely different, like a completely different style.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check it out.
I'll send you the link.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I definitely remember hearing about Scanner Darkly. I haven't heard of the other one. But I'll have to check those out.
Yeah, it was made by... Do you remember Dazed and Confused?
Uh-huh.
You remember that the main kid that always did, like, he always, like, squeezed, like...
Rory Cochran? No. You're talking about Willie Wiggins or something like that.
I think possibly. Well, he turned into an animation artist also, and I think he was one of the animators on both of those movies.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of a strange... Cool.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Overlap.
I remember because he was in that movie. I'm like, oh, that's so weird. And then I started going down the rabbit hole, figuring out what he's up to these days. And now I'm trying to remember that.
Do you do any art in your spare time, just for yourself?
I was gonna ask the same thing. Like, what kind of style?
Yeah.
I mean, other than the.
Do you do portraits?
Do you do a lot of Bob Ross?
I have done portraits. I mean, I don't. Honestly, I don't have a lot of time lately because of. Having a one-year-old, I don't really have a lot of extra time. But for the past few years, a lot of my personal artwork was doing custom vinylmation just for fun, just kind of experimenting with paint, getting kind of back into painting that way because I didn't... Mm-hmm. And I like to sculpt. Again, I haven't done it in a while, but I really like to sculpt. And I love... a lot of my extracurricular stuff was actually at Family Guy, we would do art shows within the studio. And they would have themes. So, like, we'd be like, oh, we're doing a superhero theme, or we're doing this theme. Cool. So, when I would get time to do something, a lot of it...
Did you guys have free time and downtime? Like, animating?
No.
Like
this was
busy. Like, in a barbershop where they're cutting each other's hair.
This is certainly outside of work. Like, you would do the... You wouldn't be working on it at work. You'd be doing it at home, but...
It's not like a Google, like, 20% time type deal.
It's not like you're getting paid to do this. This is just for fun. So, we would do it for fun, kind of as a studio... What is it? Building...
Teamwork.
Yeah, team care. All
right.
Just kind of, and they were a lot of fun, you know, we could auction off, it would be all silent auction, we'd auction off our own work, and people would kind of be social, and it'd be a lot of fun. So, a lot of that is, you know, what my extracurricular work was over the past few years.
Sweet.
Do you feel like, as an artist, do you feel like you're always trying to do something better, something, I don't know, better than what you did before? Always have to be working and, like, doing something.
You know, I feel that way sometimes, and every once in a while I kind of go, man, I'm feeling particularly creative. I know that sounds mm-hmm. stupid, but, like, I will bouts of, like, I'm feeling really creative, I want to do this and this and that, and then I just can't find the time anymore to do it, which is a little frustrating. But, I'm always trying to learn and make myself better because, you know, nobody ever really plateaus. Like, I think... Everybody needs to be constantly striving to be better and better because if you aren't, then you kind of just stopped.
Yeah.
Nobody gets that good.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
There was something else I was going to ask you. It was. Well, oh, I remember now. Since our show is basically about like the people that are wanting to be in the industry and they listen because these people are doing what I want to do. How do I get there? So, Annie, how did you get here? What did you do?
If someone isn't like in a zero baseline, like if someone doesn't know how to draw, doesn't know anything, what is the next thing that they need to do in order to be exactly what you are?
What do you tell Parker every day, basically?
I tell her to be a lawyer or a doctor. No, I don't. I don't tell her that at all.
She has the bluest eyes I've ever seen on a child, by the way.
Oh, yeah. She does have pretty blue eyes.
Yeah.
But both Eric and I have pretty blue eyes.
So we had it first.
Yeah. Well, I would say it was kind of a foregone conclusion.
Makes sense.
But I would say definitely to be in animation, you want to do a lot of life drawing. Honestly, a lot of observing. I just watching how people move or how creatures move or things like that. Because even though you maybe on Family Guy you might not need as intricate a knowledge of that, you do need a base knowledge of that on how things move, how certain angles look at, you know, because it's a three-dimensional art form. It's one of the few, other than, you know, sculpting, it's one of the few two-dimensional art forms.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
You gotta know how things look from every angle and how they move. So a lot of watching animation, studying it, take some great classes. I mean, it's really, really important to immerse yourself in it.
Is there, like, an episode of Looney Tunes that every animator, like, references, like, oh my gosh, when Bugs goes to the zoo, that one is...
No, I have to say, because seriously, with animation nerds, as I'm one of, there's such a wide gamut of
crazy just reference banks.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's really into something different. I mean, there's probably, I mean, I can't think of anything right now. I bet you there's go-tos like that that you talk about, but I can't really think of any right now.
Yeah, because people in live action, they'll take, oh, the scene in Clockwork Orange, like,
or, you know, like, any. Yeah, like, oh, we want to make this like a Guy Ritchie film. Like, we want this to feel this certain way, and they reference movies like that. So
people might reference, you know, particular Disney animators.
Beauty and the Beast, I remember getting a lot of, like, people talked a lot about some of the sequences in there, I think, because they were so
vivid. A great movie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of great ones.
But I imagine, I mean, it's tougher with a TV show where you still have to, you got to turn it around, you know.
It's much quicker.
Yeah.
Much quicker. But, you know, they have a lot more work to do, I think, on a feature film than we do. Right. I mean, they have so many different processes that they have to do. I can't even imagine. I mean, I have never done... Woo!
From the top!
Oh, jeez.
I jumped the gun.
I was like, whoa! See, now you ruined my train of thought.
Sorry. It derailed.
Yeah. But yeah, their process is definitely more involved than ours.
Do you guys get... I know Seth does... He's a big Star Wars fan, so when you're doing Star Wars stuff, are you ever... You know, is George Lucas calling and going, like, make sure the Death Star looks like...
It's a pretty good imitation.
You know, thanks. For the that was pretty good.
Thanks.
For the first one, a group of them, I didn't get to go, but a group of writers and artists got to go up to Lucas Ranch or Skywalker. Okay. What's it called? Like Skywalker Ranch.
Skywalker Ranch. Yeah.
And meet George Lucas. And the only reason that I don't know if Eric told you this. The only reason he wanted to do it was because his son loves Family Guy, and so he was all about it. And
I remember
he really didn't give us too many notes on it. I remember there were a couple jokes that he didn't want, that we had to take out.
Who shot first? That kind of thing.
No, did we do a joke about it? I'm sure we did. I don't remember, but I love that episode. I got to work on the Star Wars episodes, so that was a lot of fun.
Do they just kind of give you free range, though, in terms of the animation, like what you're drawing? I mean, because you're referencing Star Wars characters and...
For those, I mean, it was a lot of artist-driven stuff. I mean, we had to basically mimic the shots in the movie. So, I mean...
Okay.
You know, 6 weeks of watching Star Wars, how can you complain? You're just watching the movie and you're copying the shots. And they did want it to be very similar to the movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As far as the design goes, I remember I actually was... I did the original sketch of the Boba Fett chicken. And I got to show it to Seth, and that was really cool. And they ended up using that, so that was one of my little contributions to that trilogy.
Nice.
But yeah, we had to use a lot of reference, and we got a lot of freedom in terms of design. Like the writers obviously came up with which characters were going to be who.
Yeah.
But then we had a lot of fun with kind of figuring out what they were going to look like. And I remember one of the original designs for R2-D2, because right now it was just the R2-D2 with a big afro for Cleveland. Right. One of the original designs was actually this very freaky looking R2 with like a Cleveland head.
Okay.
And it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I'm kind of glad they went the other way. Yeah. But yeah, it was, to see the process of all that was really cool.
Interesting.
Those were definitely really fun episodes to work on, especially if you're a big Star Wars fan, which I am.
Yeah.
And how much influence does Seth have in your room? Like, I'm sure, do you guys have, like, a bullpen, or do you guys have offices?
You
like,
know, specifically? We used to, back when he was less busy, back in the day, we could get him to answer questions, and we could have him sometimes in the room, but as he got busier and busier, he didn't really participate as much in that sort of stuff.
Right.
But he was very hands-on for a long time. Like, he would do physical notes on the storyboards. I remember I saved several pages where he wrote, great job, and he signed it, and I was like, oh, saving that one.
Yeah.
So back in the day, he was very, very, very involved, but now he's just gotten very busy doing other projects, and so a lot of it has been handed off to the supervising directors and other very capable people.
At what point did you get on, like, were you on Family Guy from the beginning, or like, did you get on in a certain season, like Eric, like, were you on longer than Eric was?
No, actually, Eric was on about a year before me.
Okay.
And then I got on, that was when I got, and then we actually didn't meet for another year.
Okay.
So we're on completely different ends of the production, so I mean, our paths rarely cross.
Okay.
But yeah, he was on it right when it restarted after the cancellation. He was hired on, and then I came about a year after that.
Gotcha.
I think it was. I think technically it was like season 4 production wise, but I have no idea what the seasons are now. It's all kind of
very confusing.
It's
volume 12A.
Exactly.
All that.
Well, you work pretty much year round for the most part. I know that we had talked before, and you're like, yeah, I get a couple weeks off for hiatus, and Eric has to work throughout the whole thing.
He wishes he had a hiatus.
Yeah.
But with him, he has work coming in constantly, so they don't really, on post, they don't really have time for a hiatus. But sometimes we get the opportunity just between seasons to take a little bit of a break, which I definitely take advantage of when I can.
Oh, yeah.
You do really need it. You get a little bit of burnt out, so you need to kind of recharge your batteries before you dive back in.
Totally.
Well, actually, so you got on around season 4 or season 5 Family Guy. Did you make the switch when, because you left, did you leave King of the Hill, or did King of the Hill end? No.
King of the Hill
was running for a while.
It went, I think, another season after I left, but basically...
Oh, man, you really know how to wreck a show, huh?
Yeah.
It all just fell apart.
They didn't really know, I think, at that point, if it was coming back. And there was it was a lot of waiting. I remember very specifically having a lot longer hiatus on that show between seasons. And so the second time my hiatus came around, I was like, all right, I should pack it in. I don't know how long I'm going to be on hiatus, because it's unpaid.
Mm-hmm.
You have to kind of... just cross your fingers and hope for a phone call. And so I think a couple months went by, and finally I was like, I can't wait around anymore. I need to go look for another job. And I went and applied at Family Guy, and I got the job. And literally the Friday before I was to start at Family Guy on Monday, they called me on King of the Hill, and they said, hey, we're starting back up. And I was just like, sorry. Like, I at that point, I decided that I would rather move on to Family
Guy. This is what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what happens.
But in the end, I guess I made the right choice, because Family Guy is still going on.
Right.
Yep.
And Knife Judge is no longer doing animation.
Yeah. Oh, I really wish that weren't true.
Did you like Beavis and Butthead?
Silicon Valley's tight.
It is really funny. I like that show.
What? Did you like Beavis and Butthead when it was around?
I did.
Sweet.
Good.
Sweet. Do you have a favorite character to draw on the show?
It's a good question. I think I really like working with Stewie. I think he's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he gets to do so many different things, I think. Like, Brian's a lot of fun, too, but Brian's kind of a pain to draw from different angles. His big nose, like, having him do things that are unusual is so hard. Like, I was working recently on a sequence where Stewie has to slap Brian in the face. And this is actually not to do with Brian. But it was like, it was one of these things that's when it's written down, you're like, okay, great.
Simple enough.
And then when you actually sit down to do it, you're like... He's half the size of Stewie. How is he going to just propel himself up and slap them in the face? So, I mean, there was a lot of finagling to get that to work out. So it's things like that, sometimes that are simple, and you sit down and you're like, we have to actually work this out, figure out how the logistics of this are going to work. So, but I'd say, to answer your question, I'd say it's Stewie. I think Stewie is the most fun to work with.
Yeah.
Well, he's my favorite character on the show.
I love the episodes that are Brian and Stewie together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a great dynamic.
When they treat Stewie like a baby, and when they... treat Brian like a dog or some of my favorite things.
That's what Eric
likes. I think Eric said the same thing.
Yeah.
Well,
you guys should meet. You guys should meet sometime.
I think you guys would really get along.
A lot in common.
I think that those are the moments that I think they're the funniest with those specific characters.
Yeah. Well, it pulls you out, but it's in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
So can the family understand the baby?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I think
the answer.
Brian can, and no one else can. That's my interpretation.
But
that's
can
not
everyone
canon.
Understand Brian?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So everyone understands the dog, but no one understands the
exactly.
Baby.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
simple.
The sequence where Brian was selling his book and he was on Bill Maher is, how does that work exactly with putting, you know, you're mixing the animation in with? I remember watching it from kind of a, because I'm a production nerd, so I'm like, I assume they're talking to an empty chair, and then they put Brian into it later.
Yeah, that's what they do. I didn't work on that episode, so I can't speak specifically if that's what they did. But as I recall, I think they put some sort of, maybe like a stuffed animal or something in the chair.
Okay.
So that Bill Maher had something to look at.
All right.
I think that happened. Because it's really hard to just look at an empty chair. You can imagine something, but your eyes can be moving all over the place, and they need to have a focal point.
Right.
Because if you're not looking... eye contact is a big deal.
Yeah.
If they're not looking at each other, you notice it. Even if you don't know what's off, you know something is off.
Uh-huh.
They definitely filmed all the Bill Maher segments first, and then we animated Brian in later.
Right.
But I think Seth was maybe off screen doing the lines.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how that happened.
Oh, and how do you decide the proportion? Like, Do you just put the stuffed animal and then it's like, well, if he's looking at there, then we need to make Brian, like, if that's where his eyes are, then I guess that determines how big he is.
I think they work it out first. They decide they decide how big Brian's going to be, and then that's where they put the focal point.
Yeah, right. This isn't a low-budget thing.
Well, that's kind of what they did with Ted, though, right? I mean, they had sort of eyes, and then they could look at
Ted. I think they used, like, a stuffed bear. I don't know that for a fact, but I know, like, in Roger Rabbit, they had Charlie Fleischer dress up like a bunny. Like, I don't think they made him do it. I think he just did it to do it, which was funny.
That's even better.
But so that he could be there in the moment and everything. And they used a stuffed rabbit. And I remember that was when they were all first experimenting with this stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
At least doing it that intricate. That's my all-time favorite movie, so I'm really glad I got to mention it today.
You're welcome. Oh, yeah. Early call time, where things happen.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting that you said the eye contact is huge, because it's huge in live action, too. And when people don't see that the eye lines are correct, they think, oh, something's off, but I don't know exactly it.
I actually, to a fault, because I notice that when I'm watching live action, and now it's because I know, because I'm so used to having to deal with it at work. Yeah. I'm always looking at something and I'm like, why is she looking at his forehead? I could tell she's looking at his forehead. What's happening? Right. I don't know if maybe that's an acting tick. Like, maybe some actors can't look other people in the eyes because it gets them nervous.
It's possible.
Yeah, I don't know. But I can tell when I'm watching, like, an over-the-shoulder shot.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, you're not looking at them. I can tell. I don't know. I'm just a crazy person.
Well, no. It's like you're looking over at Crafty. You're trying to figure out what you're going to put on your
bagel. Don't touch it. Exactly.
But even with between the cuts and stuff, too, it's like they're making eye contact, and then if you cut away and they're not, you're like, okay, are they... It's specific. Like, they're showing that because they have to be feeling a different feeling than what they were previously, or what's going to happen next. And
it's jarring.
It is jarring, especially if you're paying attention to that specifically, but as a as a normal viewer, you're like, something's off. I don't know exactly it. It's funny that you mentioned. I don't know. That's the kind of stuff that we have to deal with when we're cutting. And like, do we let the audience know the joke before, or do we let them just ride it through and have us guide them? I don't know. That stuff fascinates me, but that's my geeky.
It's interesting stuff. Because those aren't the things normal viewers notice. And I know a lot of the time I'm working on shows and I'm like, no one's going to notice this. That's silly. And then I look later and I go, that does look bad. But maybe it just looks bad to me. I don't know.
I think it's because it's there.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
stuff where you've spent so much time putting something together, you know it's not right, and no one's ever going to notice the light in the shot, but you're like, it's clearly there.
Do you have production equipment ever in your shots?
No.
It doesn't happen.
Just a pencil.
Only if we draw it in.
Crop that scene.
I was
going to
say, you've drawn it in a few times, I think.
Maybe we have, like those Bugs Life outtakes, how the little boom mics are dropping into frame. I love that.
Yeah.
I think Nadav has something for us.
Yeah, I have a question for you guys. Do you guys hear that?
No, what?
These are some sound bites from the Nadav's childhood.
Hold on to your butt.
You did them fucking sound bites.
Super cool sound bites.
Get to the chopper!
From the Nadav's childhood. Get ready for some sound bites from the Nadav's childhood.
Not like this.
I'm so happy that Jack did those.
So this is a game that we play called Sound Bites from Nadav's Childhood, in which I play sound bites from Nadav's childhood. And you guys buzz in and try and get them.
Okay.
I was told that you like Disney movies.
Yeah, they're all right.
So I tried putting in some Disney movies in there, but then I realized that you meant animated Disney movies.
No, I like all Disney movies, so it's fine.
Okay.
And animated are my favorite, but we'll see. I might bite my tongue, but I'm pretty well schooled on most Disney movies.
Well, I'm not even 100% sure that some of the movies that I picked were even made by Disney. All I know is that they're kids' movies.
Then they were probably the movies I watched.
Right, because to me, every kid's movie was a Disney movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
that's true.
That's a really good point.
Like, that's what it was. They were that brand.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to go in to possibly the first movie that was ever my favorite.
How do I buzz in?
Yeah. Oh, you just say your name.
Okay.
So, just say your name, and if I hear you first, then you are the person that gets to answer.
Okay.
Here's the first one, guys.
Say hi to your girlfriend for me.
Yeah, say hi to your girlfriend for me.
She's not my girlfriend, okay? Rocky loves Emily.
What's going on?
My brothers are retarded.
What time?
It sounds so familiar, but I don't know. I can hear Super Mario in the background.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep, yeah, they're playing Super Mario.
Does anybody know what?
There is. I doubt anyone's gonna get this because this is pretty obscure.
Yeah, I give up. I don't know that one.
Does everyone give up?
I don't think it's Disney though.
I don't think it's Disney either.
I'm gonna just make a guess. JJ, The Wiz.
No.
The wizard.
Dong dong dong. Is that the one where you get it? No. There you go.
That's okay. Wrong. That's the wrong buzzer. Yep.
Okay. Does everyone give up?
Andrew.
Yeah. I gave up before
Make
we started.
Make a guess.
All right. Well, let me know if you guys have seen this.
Andrew, don't be a menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood.
No. No.
Your parents let you watch that?
No.
No.
I didn't think.
But I did.
We're gonna edit that answer out.
It's a great answer.
Why? Why?
So this movie is from Three Ninjas.
Oh,
jeez. Oh. Ever watched Three Ninjas?
I have. It's been a long time.
Yep,
it's
been a long time for me too.
Oh.
What about Three Ninjas Escape Magic Mountain?
No.
What about Three Ninjas
Strike Back?
These actually existed.
Oh yeah. This was a trilogy.
Three Ninjas
was a trilogy.
Oh my god.
Not to be confused with Surf Ninjas, which was Rob Schneider's first movie.
Okay.
She's like, I know.
I'll be pulling up. Guys, I went through a really, like how you went through a Disney, like how you like love Disney
mm-hmm.
movies. I love ninja movies. Ninja movies are my thing. So if it's got ninja in the
Didn't
title.
One of those kids have like a lisp and it was really awkward? Or is that just, I don't mean to.
Yeah, the little one, Tom.
Yes. let's go get him, guys. And I was just like, I can't take it.
Love.
I can't watch it.
There's really nothing more intimidating than a ninja with a lisp.
Than a 9-year-old ninja.
Everyone had like a secret power, and Tom's was that he could eat anything. He would just eat. Like, there was a scene where the bad guys broke into the house, and he would just like... I don't know. I think he made like, oh guys, I know how to make a really gross drink, and he made like mixed like Pepto Bismol with cinnamon and like all this gross shit, and then he tricked. Oh so my god! I'm just going through plot points in Three Ninjas, but that's fine with me.
My brother and I used to do that in restaurants, but we wouldn't drink it.
Oh yeah. So what he did was these criminals were really stupid. He just mixed all this shit together, and then he took a sip. He goes, this stuff tastes good, and then he put it down on the table and ran away. And they're like, this drink tastes good and we don't get to drink any of it, so they stop the burglary or the kid attempted kidnapping to drink this stuff. It's actually not Pepto-Bismol, it's like X-Lax.
Wait, that's the way they actually got them to drink it?
Yeah, the kid was like, this stuff tastes good, and then he ran away and they're like, I don't believe this kid.
Wow.
It tastes so good, I want some.
Yeah.
See, movies like that just kind of make me long for Home Alone.
At least that's how I remember it. Right, it was definitely, I don't remember, which one came first? Probably Home Alone.
Probably
Home Alone.
What, 89?
They probably, 88? You know what, they Roughly, probably saw Home Alone, they're like, what if we did Home Alone with ninjas?
Yeah.
And the kids are ninjas.
89 sounds about right, because I remember in fifth grade I had a big crush on Macaulay Culkin, so.
Who didn't?
Exactly.
Oh, okay, if Home Alone was 89, okay, I think this is definitely a 90s movie.
That was the first, that was the first time I actually went out and tried to find all the Christmas presents, because my mom had purchased it for me for Christmas, and I opened it up and watched it and put it back, and she's like, were you... in the closet, and
she
did you
that one out?
Yeah, because I opened it. She wasn't very happy with me.
And you're like, do you talk to Santa?
Wait, did Santa tell you this? Was it a Betamax or a VHS?
It was VHS.
Did you try and rewrap it, or did you just
I just put it back.
You didn't even try and cover your tracks.
No.
That's pretty awesome. Well, I hope
you would have been a horrible criminal.
You know, everybody was watching it and talking about it. I was like, I have to be in with the cool kids. I gotta watch this.
Even better that you get in trouble for
it.
Gotta be part of that water cooler talk. Alright guys, here's the next clip. Hopefully we don't get an ad.
Now it's even easier to look.
I know, I'm not looking.
Long live
Annie.
The king.
Is that scary how I knew it just from the cliff noise?
Yeah. They didn't even start talking and Annie like knew what it was.
I could hear the Hans Zimmer soundtrack in the background.
Holy shit. Ah. So that's
that is my favorite Disney movie.
So that is the only one, perfect, because that is the only one that I could for sure tell you is a Disney movie.
That's good. Well, I'm just relieved that I got it.
Yeah, right? The most famous line, probably. Is it the most famous line from...
What was the line? I didn't hear it.
Long live the king.
Oh, yeah.
No, probably Hakuna Matata is more famous.
Yeah, I would say
here's
so.
Here is my... okay, we're going off book here. I'm going to reenact a soundbite right now. And you guys can buzz in and figure out which Disney movie it's from.
So this is number three?
This is number
three. Are we going to be doing six today then? Is that how this is going to
maybe
work?
I don't know. We'll play it by ear.
So it's 1-0 right now.
Yeah, you're okay. you are winning. Yeah. Oh, it's actually 1-1 because I get a point if I stump you.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
But you'll definitely get this one.
All right.
Here it comes. Diamond in the diamond in the diamond in the rock.
Cave of Wonders from Aladdin.
Ding, 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 ding. Wow. And you got it.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, right? That scene gave me nightmares as a kid.
Me too. It's really scary.
Because then it's like, okay, I thought I couldn't trust oceans because I would get swallowed up.
Mm-hmm.
But now I just can't trust sand either because you get swallowed up.
Or tigers.
It's quicksand. That whole... The whole thing of quicksand is horrifying. Though?
John Mulaney has a whole thing on this.
Only in The Lion King.
And the Princess Bride.
Oh, right, yeah. Princess Bride.
Yeah.
But you know, that wasn't as huge a staple in my... you know, actually it was. What am I saying?
Yeah, that should be.
Yeah, it is. I had two older sisters.
It really
should
be.
They run it.
Inconceivable.
Yep.
Anybody want a peanut?
Anybody want a peanut? Okay, this next one. Okay, so I copied this link with the time, but for some reason it doesn't translate to iPad, and I don't remember where...
Well, that makes up for the one that you just made up.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. You know what? Yeah, we just won't do that. I'll tell you what it was. No, you know what? We'll save it for next time. Yeah.
Okay.
We already did Varsity Blues, right?
Yeah.
I would never have gotten that 3 years.
I don't want your life.
I don't want your life. What's great is when I saw the American Pie reunion at the New Beverly. Have you ever seen movies at the New Beverly or when they do like presentations there?
I don't think so.
So what they do is when they show old movies there, they show trailers from movies that came out that year.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's cool.
And so when I went to go see, they showed the first American Pie and the like fourth American Pie. And, they showed the trailer to Varsity Blues. And right when I saw it. I've never even seen the movie, like, in whole.
Oh, really?
I've only have the trailer memorized, because I saw, I guess, a lot of movies that year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I screamed
out. It was a big thing for me to watch that movie in the theater.
Varsity Blues?
Because it came out during...
Because of the scene with Amy Smart?
Well, that too. It came out during football season, and we had pretty much, like, the whole football team there watching the show.
Yeah, the extent of my knowledge of Varsity Blues is that Michael Scott made the entire office watch it every day of the week. That's all I know about it.
I don't want that life. All right, guys. This next bite.
Which will be our third? Fourth bite?
Our fourth bite.
Fourth bite.
I have a feeling like I might
have... fourth?
Mm-hmm. Because the diamond in the rough was the third one.
He did his own reenactment.
Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure I...
2-1.
2-1. Yeah, you guys are doing...
I can't
really
even follow the score.
This is a reenactment. The first time we play this game, and now I'm pretty sure that this is a bite that I've done before, but I can't recall, so I'm just going to play it.
All right.
I think that I played a different bite from this movie.
Hey, so, know this.
JJ.
Killing is my business, ladies, and business
is good.
JJ?
Hey, so.
Major Pain.
Ding, 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 ding.
I've seen it.
That's definitely...
I've totally done that one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that exact...
But, yeah.
That exact bit.
Okay, sure. Sorry, guys.
But...
It's okay.
Business is good.
It's good.
I like when he does the robot in the movie. That's just my personal favorite.
Unfortunately, that is not a sound bite.
No, it isn't.
That
but
is a dance
visual
move.
Bite.
It's a visual bite.
Yeah.
He dresses up like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever.
Mm-hmm.
A white suit.
Yeah. Well, it's a military suit.
Is it?
It's a military...
Oh, yeah, it's a Navy.
Suit.
Yeah.
It's decorated and shit.
Yep.
So
not John Travolta at all. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
We'll talk to John Badham about that.
Okay.
And now here's another one that probably Annie will not get.
Well, she's winning, so it's okay.
Oh, that is true. She probably...
We have purposely trained him wrong as a joke. If you've got...
I think she might know it.
No, it sounds familiar for some reason, but I'm not going to guess.
We have purposely trained him wrong as a joke.
JJ. Kung Pao.
Ding, 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 ding. Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
That is such a... We are children, we are children.
Or is it called Tongue of Fury? I forget.
I think that was the sequel.
Right. Did the sequel ever come out?
No.
No.
There must have been another movie I saw where they trained something wrong.
Oh, no, that's where that bite is from.
No, I'm just saying, I don't know why it was
it's from my child. So, with that, is it a tie?
2-2.
2-2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have we ever had a tie?
Well, you know what?
Monumental.
You know, tie goes to the guest.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Annie, you're our winner. All right. And what you get is you get to give us this present. Now, I noticed this when I was looking. I'm looking at this, what's it called? A blank Anna?
Vinylmation.
His hand is curved over here as if you could put something in it.
You can. A lot of them come with accessories.
Oh.
Yeah. That's just the way that they're molded.
Okay.
So they all look, so they're all the same, but some of them will hold something. Like, they'll have a little something to hold.
Awesome. Because, like, right now it seems like an American flag is what you're
holding into his hand. Should hold an American flag, right? Perfect. Maybe if you can get one of those little ones on a toothpick.
Perfect. Mm-hmm.
Done and done. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Well, Annie, thank you so much for coming by.
This was fun.
I feel like I learned a lot. Eric did a really shitty job explaining how animation works. Because I feel like we learned all new information with you.
Well, good. I'm glad that he was so terrible.
Maybe now that we've had each of you separately, maybe we gotta have you on together.
That would be
with
fun.
Parker.
Wayne Parker would
the Family Guy family.
I'm sure that would work really well.
Just looking at all your cords.
Yeah.
The treadmill. Well,
thanks, guys.
For the listeners, they can follow Annie at on Twitter, right?
Admiral Ackbrown, AKBROWN, at Twitter.
You want to spell that out? No.
Thank you for the first part.
Hippopotamus just called Daliophobia at Twitter.
Awesome. What? So follow her there. Follow us at Early Call Time. Follow us on Facebook. Go to our website.
Check out the number.
Hold on. It is.
Wait. You can text or you can leave a voicemail.
For this Philadelphia number, which is 267.
Yep.
3-6.
Oh, you were getting there.
You were.
Nobody knows this number.
Yep.
JJ and I know
5-5.
It.
5-5. 5-2-2.
Nope.
2-6. Boy, we are confused.
All right, guys, just go on the website if you want to see the number. Thanks for listening. If you want to follow Annie, and listen to this outro. Bye.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.